Today's daf in Masechet Sukkah is daf Chof Aleph, but we'd like to begin once again at the beginning of the Halakha of Perek, which was going to give us a Richie moment, if he'll share it with us. All right, I guess not.
There we go.
Yeah, why not? I want to start again from the Mishnah. I think it's a good idea. We're right at Chof Amud Beis, and we're holding right there at that Mishnah. So, we begin with the idea of a Yashen Tachat Amita Basukkah. Somebody is sleeping under a bed in the Sukkah. He, for some reason, has not been Yotzi Yedei Chovato. Now, it's interesting that to us it seems very obvious, but how could it be Yotzi Yedei Chovato? He's not under the Schach. But the truth is that that's not at all obvious, and we're going to see that the Gemara actually is wondering why it's true. And I mean, the bed isn't even 10 tefachim high, as if it's important for the bed to be 10 tefachim high. We're going to discuss all of that, but definitely it's time to drop some of our prejudices, as we'll see. Omer Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says that's not true. I could tell you for a fact that Noagin Ayinu, Shayinu Yeshenim Tachat Amita Bifnei Hazakenim Velo Amru Lanu Davar. We actually used to sleep under the bed in the presence of all the greatest Gedolei HaDor. We came to learn by them and so on. Nobody ever said a word to us that we're doing something wrong. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, Amar Rabbi Shimon says, well, I can tell you that the whole point is that you're not allowed to sleep under bed from the Maisa Betavi, Avdosha Rabbi Gamliel. And he used to sleep under the bed in the Sukkah because he liked to listen in to what the Talmid HaChachamim was discussing, because he was a big Talmid HaChachamim himself, as you know. And he was an Eved, so he didn't want to make the Sukkah smaller because of him. So he would sleep under the bed. So Rebbe Gamliel said to the Zakenim in the Sukkah, sort of joking, see what a tremendous Talmid HaChacham, my Eved is. Shu Talmid HaChacham. And he needs Yodea, She'avadim Pturim in HaSukkah. So he knows that since he's an Eved, he's not Chayiv in a Sukkah, because it's a mitzvah saseh, shazman gorma, and only vote those mitzvot that the Dashim are Chayavot are the Avadim Chayavim. Because of that, Yoshenu tachat amitas. You see, he went to sleep under the bed, knowing that that way he's not really losing a mitzvah, and that he's able to leave room for the Chachomim. And you see from there, says Reb Shimon, which proves that, I mean, since this was the joke, so it proves that he's taking for granted that that's a given. You don't sleep under a bed and still be able to be yotz. Ask the Gemara of Haleka Asara. Don't understand. How is it that just because you're sleeping under the bed, you're not going to be considered to be sleeping in the Sukkah? The bed isn't 10 tefachim high. Tirgama Shmuel. So Shmuel said, no, it's talking about that the bed is 10 tefachim high. And that was the entire point of the Mishnah. Now this, you must admit, is very strange. Why are we taking for granted that it has something to do with the height? Why are we taking for granted that just because you're under a bed and you're not sleeping under the schach, that wouldn't be a problem? Why are we answering with Shmuel? And Shmuel, I mean, as Tosva says, you might think that Shmuel is hearkening back to his old Shita, remember? This would be Shmuel Shitato, where he was talking about before we had the case on Daf Yud, we had the case of Sukkah, Tachat HaSukkah. So over there, Shmuel said that you need 10 tefachim, the pasul of Sukkah, tachat HaSukkah. But maybe according to those who argued over there that even if it's 1 tefach or even if it's 4 tefachim, maybe they should say the same thing over here. But it's strange, we don't find anyone arguing over here. So Tosha says maybe a bed is different, because maybe a bed, since it's not meant to stay there the whole time, you put it down at night and so on. So it's not called an oil that is chashev. We'll see later on, there's a svara that an oil aroi is not mevatel an oil kva. The whole discussion is very strange. I mean, what are you sleeping under the roof of the sukkah, or are you not sleeping under the roof of the sukkah? I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with Sukkah Tachas HaSukkah, does it? I mean, Sukkah Tachas HaSukkah is talking about where both Chags are kosher. It's just like this Gzerat HaKatuv, right? That you, for some reason, the Torah says, look, you're not allowed to sleep. If you've got one Sukkah, even though you're underneath perfectly kosher Chag, you're still not allowed to sleep under the Sukkah. What is going on over here? And how would it harken back to the din of Shmuel as Sukkah Tachas HaSukkah? So there's a very beautiful discussion between the Rif and the Reb Zracha HaLevi and the Ramban, the Mechomais, and so on, and all brought by the Ritvo attempts to clarify the entire thing, in which he brings the Rif, and the Rif says on this Mishnah that the reason that it's potzel is because the Havilei Kesukah Tachat HaSukah, which is absolutely shocking, because as the Razah says, Ma'inyan Sukkah Tachat HaSukah Lakan. This is absurd. This has nothing to do with that din. Harei ein kan shem sukkah velo inyan sukkah tachat sukkah. This has not, it's, first of all, there is no other sukkah. So what is he referring to? And it has nothing to do with the sukkah. I mean, because what he should have said, v'alchi avilei lamer, what he should have said, is shelo yatza yedei chovato lefi sheyoshev tachat ha'or velo tachat ha'sukah. Why doesn't he just say straight out? He's not Yotzi because he's sitting under, not the schach, but under an ohel. I mean, look, we've had this whole thing about, you know, the kinofas on the mita, sleeping under a canopy bed. And we said, okay, over there, you're not sleeping under the sukkah. You're sleeping under the ohel that the bed is making. So, like, what is the rift going on about, Tainas the Raza? Okay, it's really a question. So now the Ramban writes like this. Rabbeinu HaGadol katav, that the das of the Rif is that the psul is not mishum ohel. Because as far as ohel is concerned, if it was really because you're in another ohel, why the heck would the Gemara take for granted that it needed to be ten tefachim? And, I mean, the din of an ohel agabe Shabbos or agabe Tuma, there's no such halacha as requiring asara. Because tefach al tefach is considered to be an oil, linyan Shabbos, linyan Tumah. So what is it coming from, this halacha? That the only reason that we're passing over here is not because of oil, but because of sukkah tachas ha-sukkah. What would that mean? He says the point is like this. Everything under the schach is inside a sukkah, is it not? That's the bottom line. I mean, what do I care if I, where does it say you have to sit under schach in a sukkah? It says you have to be in a sukkah. So if you have a subsuming sukkah, why isn't everything in that sukkah in a sukkah? The Torah never said to sleep under the schach of a sukkah. And in fact, there certainly is no chiyuv to sleep under the schach of a sukkah. Suppose you like to sleep with your blanket covering your head. Is there anybody who suggests you're not sleeping in the sukkah because you're not sleeping under the schach of a sukkah and you're sleeping under a blanket? There's no such halacha. Of course you're sleeping in the sukkah. You and your blanket are in the sukkah. So over here, the same thing is true. You and your bed are in the sukkah. So what's the problem? So therefore, we've been working really out of prejudice, says the Ramban. There is no such din like that. The only reason that we came up with this idea is because since there is a halacha of a sukkah, tachas ha-sukkah. Now, that's an insane halacha on the surface. Both of those sukkahs are underneath schach kosher. So what difference does it make whether you're under the subsuming sukkah of the upper sukkah or you're underneath the lower sukkah? The Torah is telling you that there is a hakpada, that you cannot be in a place that is defined on its own, even though that place is inside of a sukkah kshera. By extension, we see that we should not jump to conclusions about one area being subsumed by another area. Because if that assumption were correct, then the entire concept of sukkah tachat ha-sukkah could simply not exist. Now, obviously, this is not a sukkah tachat ha-sukkah. It's an extension of the idea of sukkah tachat ha-sukkah. And therefore, what we're saying is that given that a mokum that is choshev to its own, maybe it's only a psul derabanan. Maybe it's not really like sukkah tachas sukkah, which is gzirat hakatuv. But the point is that once it gets to a level in which it's considered to be a makom chashuv b'fnei atzmo, and that's always something that is ten tefachim high, it was considered to be a makom chashuv by itself. So maybe over there, we answered it over here based on the idea of sukkah tachas sukkah. But what the Balam, what the Razot says about why did the Rif mention sukkah tachas sukkah? It's nothing to do with the price of eggs in China. Tainas the Ramban, without that makor, the whole thing falls apart. Fine. It would be based on that that we had the entire discussion about sleeping under the kinofas hamita and so on and so forth. That we take for granted that the idea over here is once we have that halacha, so then we say if it's a makom chashuv, it's not the same as just sleeping under the blankets. That's the idea. So it's a very, very different concept. Anyway, says the Gemara, there's no asara. Tirga Mashmul, there is asara. So now we finally understand what that discussion is based on. Okay, now Rabbi Yehuda says, nothing wrong with sleeping under a bed in a sukkah. So in other words, he's saying, even if it is asara, there's nothing wrong. Now, how do we explain? Take a look in the way that Rabbi Yehuda deals with ohalos. Because there's lots of other dinim of ohalos, right? Now, of course, one of the places that we deal with ohalos is, believe it or not, Mesechet Ohalos, our favorite makom of ohalos. So, it says over there, and you'll remember the case over there we talked about in the Mishnah, where there was a drainage area underneath the house that was a large pipe, and the question is if there's a kezayis ben hames under that area, and so on. So there, we learned also that it does not have to be a pipe. Let's say you have a hole that was hollowed out by water that was constantly flowing there. Or maybe you had mice that had made holes underneath the floor. Or, you know, moles or whatever. Oshratzim. Oshachalatom alachat. It could be that maybe the area that the hole appeared in was originally filled with salty or a chemical that got washed away now with the water and ate away at the earth. Or suppose you had a truck that dumped a pile of stones for a building, where there's always places that are just empty space between the large stones. Or maybe you were setting up to do a building with a whole pile of lumber. So there was a siwar shel korot. So you had this pile of lumber. And also, very often you have like holes in the lumber. I mean, you're talking about a hole of one tefach. Maybe there was a kezayit min hamet at one end, and then there was something that would became tamei akli on the other end. Whatever the cases are, in any event, that these kind of situations would be mahil ala tuma, and it would be considered to be matame the kli on the other end of the pile of lumber. Now, Rabbi Yehuda there says that no, the problem is that any ohel, which was not made specifically by a human for the purposes of ohel, not dumping a pile of lumber or wood, not animals that make a hole underneath a house, not water that's washed, none of this counts. It's not considered to be an ohel lagabe tuma at all. Where does Rabbi Yehuda get that idea from? That something has to be made for the purposes of ohel. He learns that out from the Mishkan. Yolif ohel, ohel mi Mishkan. K'tiv acha zot torat adam ki amut ba ohel. U'k'tiv hatam, it says by the Mishkan, the same language. Vayifros et ha ohel ala Mishkan. So just like the main point of the Mishkan is that everything was done with clear-cut intent. As a matter of fact, that's where we learn the whole halacha, Balechas Bakshaves, the idea of how the consciousness of an event is the main, of a purpose is the main thing that turns it into that thing. So therefore, in the same way that Bidei Adam is absolutely central to the Asiyas HaMishkan, Afkan Bidei Adam, it means an Ohel that is made by a human for a purpose. Now, the Rabbanan, what did they do? I mean, we know that for many purposes, we do learn out Ohel, Ohel, Mi Mishkan. in terms of the materials, what's metame, tumas, so on and so forth. I mean, they can't deny that there is a basic halacha that compares Mishkan to the dinim of Ohalot. Yes, it's true. However, when it comes to the halacha of the dinim of tuma, it certainly is not going to limit it to something that is made with a machshava tchila like the Mishkan, because look how many times the Torah goes out of its way to repeat in that pasuk and in that sugya the word ohel. Zot haTorah adam ki amud ba ohel, kol haba el ha ohel, kol asher ba ohel. It's like going out of its way to add additional definitions of ohel when it comes to tumah. So therefore, the Rabbanan hold that that's coming to include even an ohel that wasn't made by humans specifically for purposes of ahalut. Okay, anyway, let's take a look. This is what Reb Yehuda seems to be saying. Let's take a look and see whether he's consistent with this. Because now you're telling me, v'sava Reb Yehuda, kol ohel she'enu osu bidei adam, eno ohel. V'raminu, what are we going to do with the other halacha that the Mishnah in Pora says? And this was an amazing halacha. Remember, the din by Pora turned out to be, we just had in Yuma, that we needed to do a mafrishin, a sakayin, a surface hapora, mibesai, and we don't allow echav akayanim to touch him, and so on and so forth. I mean, so this was like everything. Remember, we had a special Lishkas HaEven, where everything was made out of Kli Avanim and Kli Galolim in order not to be Makabel Tuma. Where did all of that come from? So remember, it really comes from a Kula, not a Chumra. It comes from the fact that the Torah allows us to do this Refas HaPara with an Adam Tahor. And from the fact that it stresses Adam Tahar, we learn out that he's Tamei in classic fashion. Because what it means is that there's some level of Tahar on him. Which means that he can be Tamei, but he had to have already gone to the mikveh so that he would be a Tful Yom. Okay, but he could be a Tful Yom. Now, all other things are not done by a Tful Yom when they have to do with Kedusha, right? Because of the fact that that was true and that Tzedukim went crazy over that and says, you idiots, it says Adam Tahar and you say Tahar means Tameh. If ever there was an insane statement, that's the insane statement of people reading their words into the Torah. And therefore they insisted that it had to be an Adam Tahar and he could not be a Tful Yom. So we went out of our way bedavka to use a Tful Yom. Now, once we go out of our way to be Metame, the Kohen, so that he can be a Tful Yom, we created a sense of, lackadaisical attitude towards Inyonim of Pora. My gosh, I mean, even Metame, the Kohen. So we were worried that because we created that lackadaisical attitude, now we have to go out of our way to make sure that people are very aware of how much they have to be careful about a Pora. Look, this is obviously all a logistic and simplistic description of the issues. The deeper issues, of course, have to do with the fact that the entire concept of Pora is paradoxical in terms of Tuma, correct? So what we're doing here is essentially we're deepening the elements of paradox, even in the Gzeres Derabbanan, which is it's so stunning. So on the one hand, we're saying, yes, it's kosher b'tful yom. On the other hand, it's saying you can't do anything that was in any way connected to Tuma. It can't even be with kalium that are crazy things. So even the Derabbanan now reflects this. Now, the craziest thing of all, this is about to blow your minds. The craziest thing of all is that remember that we have to get the water out of Mayim Chayim, right? So it's got to be coming from a natural stream. And the question is, how do we get that water if that water might become, the person who's bringing the water might be Tamei? So what do you mean he might be Tamei? I mean, but he isn't Tamei. How do you know he isn't Tamei? Anywhere that you walk to get the water, you might have walked over a buried body. What are the chances? It's possible, isn't it? Well, we're talking about a Pora. And it's not, there's no way that we can have somebody, Tamei Meis, taking the water of the Pora in order to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash for the Kohen who is Surif as a Pora. Because one of the things that we do for him, remember, is that we sprinkle every single day. We sprinkle the Pora Aduma on this guy from all of the Poras that were ever. This is crazy. There's only one possible solution. We must find a human who was never tummy. But where does one find a human who was never tummy? He must have been raised off planet, because anywhere that he was raised on the earth, he might have become tummy at some point in his life. So what do? We create an off-planet platform, which is vis-a-vis Tuma, is basically in orbit. So how do we do that? Well, we have to create different levels of arcs above each other so that wherever there would be Tuma Mace, the platform that's built on top of these arches are not going to be Makabel Tuma from any Tuma underneath them. So the first thing we would do is we would find a natural stone area, which had never been in any way exposed to human impact, as far as we could tell. So we've got a solid bedrock. On top of that bedrock, we build two levels of arches so that the area where the arch comes together is covered by the open area of the other arch. And then on top of that, we build a platform, and then we bring onto that platform pregnant women, and they have their babies on that platform. And the children never can leave that platform for their whole life. And then by the time they're 7 years old or 8 years old, we don't let them get older than that. Who knows? They may be very precocious children. They'll be Roya Carey when they're 9 years old. So we can't let them be old. Okay, so now they're little kids, 7-year-old kids, 8-year-old kids, and now they are going to be getting the water from the Shiloh. But how do they get to the water? Ah. So basically, we're going to have to make sure that they are on an ohel the entire way that they get to the Shiloh, right? So how do we do that? So we bring these very wide-bellied animals, shvarim, oxen. We put these doors on top of the oxen, put the kids on the doors, travel to the Shiloh, so that they are protected from all over by an anti-tuma force shield. They get to the Shiloh, they bring the water, and then we bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, and there the Kohen finally has kosher water to make the Efer HaPorah work for him when he's getting ready to be served as HaPorah. Whew! Okay, so this is like the max, okay? As Tosis points out, look, I mean, the whole thing is, in a sense, it's a little ridiculous. I mean, what do you mean the kids are so young and they were never Roya Carey? They were born, weren't they? So they were exposed to Tumas Leida. They were exposed to, like, whatever would be Metame them at that point. I mean, anyway, we're going to have to be Metame. Says Tosis, look, you know, you can't handle everything, but whatever you can handle, you handle. Meaning that the whole point over here is to bring out the insanity of the Chumrah. So fine, okay, so this is what we're doing. So now we've got these kids, you know, you can imagine it's all over TV, the internet. Okay, this is the moment we've been waiting for. Here's little Yossi, and he's been growing up here. Yossi, how did it feel growing up on this special off-planet platform of you? It's really exciting. Anyway, so the moment comes, the big moment comes, we bring the Shvarim, we put the kids on the Shvarim, and so on and so forth. Now, here is where we get to Rabbi Yehuda Shita about what the halacha is about Ohalim. So it says over there in the Mishnah in Parah, Chatzerot hayu bnuyot b'Yerushalayim agabei sela. So they built these entire courtyards that were on top of bedrock, and underneath the platform, they had tachteim chalal, so they would make, as I said, they would make these arches, and that raised the platform so that there could be no chance of a kever hatahom. Kever hatahom means, doesn't mean literally tahom. The kever hatahom means there should be no suffix of any kind of tumah. And then they would bring these pregnant women, mevim dashimu barot, v'yoldot sham. And that's where they would raise their children, begadlot b'neim sham lepara, a full service chotzer, you know, with schools, grocery stores, and so on. All of this, of course, with little astronaut-sized portions, but what can you do? It's expensive to take things off planet. And there they would be, begadlot b'neim, and when it came time to get the water, maybe im shvarim, ve'agabeim dlatot, and they would put on top of these shvarim these doors on their back. The tinokot would sit on the doors, because sot shel even b'yadayim, and they were carrying these stone cups, because they couldn't use anything that would be makabel tuma. They got to the Shiloh, and then they would get off into the water, because they assumed that there would be no nobody would bury a mace under the water. Okay, so then we have a little bit of Machlokas Rashi. And Tosfos Rashi learns that the reason that the Tanna Kamma holds that they would get off to go into the water is because he held you need to do the milui mayim with your own hands. You can't lower the cup into the water with a rope. So therefore, for this brief moment, we let them get off of their tumah-free platforms. They filled up the cups, they went back on to the doors, and then they would carry it this way to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi says, no, what? You can't let the kid off of the door to go into the water. What if there's the mace under the water? No. Mimekomo yamishalshel, he would lower the cup from standing on top of that door, and he would lower it with this rope, and he would fill it up, because we're worried about him getting off, even into the Shiloach. Mipnei kever hatohom. Now, what does this have to do with us? It has to do with us because of the Braita, Vitanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo ayumi v'indlatot. They did not bring doors. They just used these big shvarim. And it was the shor itself, the back of the shor, that prevented the tuma from going through. Now, last I heard, unless there's this company that makes these door dog robotics, but I never heard of a shor from Robotics International. So anyway, this shor is not manufactured. Last I heard, shor are these biological entities, and it's an oil she'eino osi bidei adam. And nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda is claiming that we did not use doors, we used these shvarim. But I thought that Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said back in Olot that you can't use something that wasn't made by humans for the expressed purpose, which Ashar certainly does not fit. So how in the world does Rabbi Yehuda in Olos fit Rabbi Yehuda in Pora? The author of Dimi, Omar Rabbi Elazar, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Kmelo Egrov. Rabbi Yehuda is Moda. Remember that we had that big watermelon man's fist? We called him Ben Avatiach, watermelon. And that guy's fist was as big as a normal head. You know, so this guy, let me tell you, this guy was boxing you, man. You really ran into a locomotive. And the din over there was that the egrof of Ben Avatiach, which is so much larger than a tefach, once an oil is that sheer, then it would be an oil no matter what. And it's only the minimal oil from the size of a tefach till the egrof. Remember, by the way, it sounds crazy, but we had the Mishnah in Oilos that was talking about the various shiurim of specific oiling, particularly a case where you open the small hole in the wall to allow the light in. And over there, we had different shiurim, where there's machlokas over there, whether that, even though it's smaller than a tefach, or what would be the size of such a thing. Anyway, there the Mishnah mentions the melo egrof as being a special shiur, which is more able to be maybe a satuma than a tefach, where it's made for specific purposes and not for having anything under it. And so there's certainly a basis for this. It's not stam, the Gemara is coming up with this new idea. So since we see that the Mishnah in Oyalais made that special halacha of Mr. Watermelon Man, so Rabbi Yehuda is made that shear of Malo Egrof is enough. And you know what? It must be, because it says in the Braita, Moda Rabbi Yehuda, Bashkifinu v'nikikei ha'slaim. Rabbi Yehuda is made that where you have these giant boulders that collapse and leave underneath them an enormous space. So you have these crevices that you'll find in a natural cliff. That for sure is considered to be an oil. Why? It's not maybe de'adam, because it's gigantic. So apparently the size does matter. Anyway, Vahare Delet. What are you going to say? Well, what about the case of the Delet, which has a lot of egrofim? Now, look, this is based on an extension. This Gemara is making a very important assumption. The assumption is that the din of egrof that we just mentioned is not a specific attempt to address the difference between osubi de'adam or eno osubi de'adam. Namely, since the halacha of egrof versus a tefach is actually a result of our understanding of the Mishnah in Olot about the small openings for ore, it must be that if there is a problem with an ohel, whatever that problem is, but it's some detail issue of an ohel, that once it's the size of an egg roaf, then already we consider it to be an ohel. That's why we're saying, okay, over here we've got a problem, namely, it's enu asu bidei adam. That problem we can handle with an egg roaf. So what that means is that assumedly, any detailed issue that isn't working out would nonetheless not be applicable to an ohel that is an egg roaf. That's what we're assuming. And therefore, we're concerned about the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you don't bring doors. I don't understand. Why can't you bring a door? I mean, in the same way that you could, I don't know what's wrong with the door, okay? Whatever it is that's wrong with the door, maybe it's not made, it's not standing in its particular way, and therefore the Rabbanu didn't want to use it as an oil, or it's not derech oil, whatever the problem is, I don't want to get into it, but whatever Rabbi Yehuda has against using a door, should it not also be addressed by the fact that the door is many egrofim high off of the ground? And therefore, there's no defect that is still valid as a detailed defect once it's the egrof. And nonetheless, a delet sheyesh bar kama egrofim, nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda insists, don't bring doors. So apparently, even though whatever's wrong with a door, don't rely on a door, but it's got a lot of egrofim. So apparently, we don't look at something which is an egrof plus as necessarily having addressed all of its defects in terms of oa. Amar Abaye, it's not what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. He's saying you don't need doors. He's not saying you can't bring doors. Lo hutzrichu lavid latot is what he meant. Rava says, no, that's not what he meant. When he said, lo ayu mevim latot kol ikar, he meant exactly what he said. They would definitely not bring doors for a very good reason. Doors make it worse. But why? For a different reason. Nothing to do with the dinim of the oyalis. The problem over here is, if you are a kid that was raised on a platform your whole life, and now's your big moment to get off of that platform, you're going to tell me the kid's not going to stick his head outside to see what's going on? So therefore, these kids are ready to be really wild kids. I mean, you know, they've been on a leash for the past 8 years. So therefore, don't bring doors, because then they'll become overconfident and they'll figure they can stick their head out. But if they stick their head out, it might go right out over an olam eis. So therefore, get them scared. Put them on the back of a shore. Oh God, they're holding on for dear life. They're not going to move to side to side. I mean, once you've abused these kids, keep it up. Make them terrified. So now they're not going to stick their heads out at all. And therefore, mipnei shedaito shotino gasalav, we're worried. Shema yotzi rosho echad me'evarav, will stick his head out over the door. V'yitamei bekever hata'om. Therefore, said Rabbi Yehuda, let them be frightened and let them be riding right on the back of that shore, which is quite slippery and scary, and hold on for dear life. Tanya kavasi derava, and in fact, that's what it says. Rabbi Yehuda omer, lo ayum evin latot kolikar, mipnei shedaito shotino gasalav shema yotzi rosho echad me'evarav, v'yitamei bekever hata'om. Instead, what we did was we brought these big Egyptian shvarim, Mevi'im shvarim ha-mitzrim, which have very wide tummies, kresoteyem rechovot, and the tinokot yoshvim agabeyem, and they've got the kosot shel even biyadeyem, and they come up to the shiloach, and then they would get off for a minute, oluvi yoshvim agabeyem, and so on and so forth. But, okay, so now that we've done all of this, I have no idea why we did all of this. Okay, well, now I'm going to tell you why we did all of this, okay? We're talking over here about a mitah. You said that this mita is going to be certainly a heck of a lot more than an egg roof. You said it was going to be 10 tefachim high, right? And yet, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Noagin ayinu, shayinu yeshenim tachat amita, bifnei azikenim. So apparently, Rabbi Yehuda holds, no, what's the big problem with an ohel? Whatever, it's not a real ohel. There's some problem with it. I don't know, maybe it's not kavua, or maybe because it's made for its surface, whatever. But, I mean, if Rabbi Elazar was right, that wherever you have an ohel, which is egrofim, where's Yehuda kicking out in the middle of the daf here? La, what's going on? So if that's the case, then why does Rabbi Yehuda hold that there's no problem? Over here, there is a full dinned ohel because of the fact that it's more than an egrof. Don't give me no excuses. So obviously, Reb Elazar is not correct. Even something that is an egrov is still not going to be able to overcome whatever inherent problems are in it. No, but over here, there's a more fundamental problem. This is not a detail. The problem is that shine mita ha'ilu legaba asuya. If something is used from the top down and not from its underside, so then it's not considered to be an O because it's not being ma'ahil at all. Its purpose is to be able to sit on and not to be under it. That's a different problem. Oh, yeah? So, I mean, and what about the shore? I mean, do people use the underneath part of the shore or do people ride on the upper part of the shore? I mean, so why is a shore a better shield than a bed? How do you explain that? Kiyata Ravin Amar Reb Elazar. Yes, actually, a shor is used as a oyel. Why is that? I know you better have a lot of guts to do this, but if it's raining or if it's really hot outside and you are a shepherd and there's nowhere else to go, you go to sleep under your shor. I could say it's quite risky, but, you know, maybe this shor is a very loyal shor. In any event, so they were hoyolo meginim al haro'im b'chama b'pnei hachama u'b'geshamim b'pnei hageshamim, and therefore it is not true to say people don't sleep under beds, but they do sleep under shors. So because of that, they were able to use the shor as an ohel m'pnei kever hatahom for these children who were raised off planet. So, okay, and a bed? Where do you keep your slippers? Huh? Last I heard, people use their bed to actually cover their shoes and slippers. So, iachi mitanami ho meginal aminalim v'sandalim shetachtea. I mean, it's like it keeps dust off of your slippers, doesn't it? So, you can't consider it a non-ohel by definition, because it is definitely used for ahala, for shielding. El amarava, okay, I'll tell you what the point is. Shinei shvarim, shvarim are different from a bed. Why? Because they are made lechatchila by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Pasuk says, they're asuyim lahagin al b'nei me'ayim shalahem, sh'ne'emar or uvasar talbisheni. Look at this, a lashon of schach. So that means that the sichuch, so to speak, which is the entire structure of the top of the shor, is seen as a development that is there in order to protect the organs underneath the skin. Okay, now we could take a completely different approach, and we could say that it's true that even a bed is an ohel, and that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that there's no problem in sleeping under an ohel is because, this is Rabbi Yehuda Shitato. Because remember when we had all of the list of all of the shitas that held that a sukkah is a diras kva? So one of the primary shitas was Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that a sukkah could be gavoa b'esrimama, right? So that would mean that since he holds sukkah's diras kva b'ina, and the mita is a diras arai. And that's the point. A sukkah as an ol keva, lo ati ol arai ubevatel ol keva. So therefore, since what we're talking about is, as we said, the idea of the sukkah being a subsuming space, then what we need to point out is that a subsuming space will always be more likely to be the overall subsuming space if the alternative space where you are that is within it is not even a permanently constructed space. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says there's no problem because the sukkah has a much greater chashivas as the definition of the halal in which you are sitting. Wait a minute, now that doesn't really add up, because Rabbi Shimon was also listed, remember the whole list of all the different shitas in which they all, says Abaya, they're all considered to be a part of the same overall set of shitas that tend in the direction of sukkah stura diras kva. One of them was also Rabbi Shimon, remember, because Rabbi Shimon says you need four walls in your sukkah, and it's the fourth wall that the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai comes to bring down to a tefach. And we related that din also to the greater kvias in the sukkah. And even though he's a member of the same set of shitas as Rabbi Yehuda, he's the one that says in the Mishnah that actually Tavi Avdai was not in the sukkah because he was under the bed. So why does he argue with Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Shimon also says sukkah dirat kva be'inan, and nonetheless he says ati olaroyim avata lo keva. Says the Gemara, yeah, okay, fine, that's good for the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Mar savar ati olaroyim avata lo keva, umar savar lo ati olaroyim avata lo keva. So the question is whether the kviyut of the construction itself is actually an important element in the definition of subsumed space or subsuming space. Rabbi Shimon. Let's just read the last part again. Omer Rabbi Shimon, there was a Maisi B'Tavi Avdol Shrom Gamliel, and the whole thing. Now, Tanya, in the Braita, it says this even more clearly. It says, Omer Rabbi Shimon, Misichato, doesn't it mean Dvorav Shor Rabbi Shimon, Shrom Gamliel. It says, Misichato, Sichato generally refers to blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like casual conversation. Dvarav refers to something that you're saying with a very specific intent. Now, here in the Braita, Amar Rabbi Shimon, from the Sicha of Rabbi Gamliel, we learn two things. First of all, we learn that Avodim are Pturim in Asukah. And secondly, we learn Shayoshen Tachat Asukah, Lo Yatza Yedei Chavato. So why does he use the word Sichato? I mean, that's not very nice, is it? I mean, let him say Midvarav Shor Rabbi Gamliel. What does he have to make it like such a low-level casual conversation? No, that's the point that Rabbi Shimon is coming to teach us. Milta gavurche kamashmalan. Namely, it's what Rav Acha bar Ada said. Some say it was Rav Acha bar Ada in the name of Rav Amnuna, who quoted it from Rav. Minayin shafilu sichat chulin of Talmid HaChomim tzrichalim. How do you know just casual talk of Talmid HaChomim need to be worked on and understood? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says that nothing here where the Torah is compared to Vahayaka Eich Shatul Al Palgeimayin, that's referring to a Talmud Chacham, and Asher Priyo Yitain Bi'ito, Ve'aleyu Lo Yibol, even the leaves are not going to drop. What are the leaves? The leaves are the things that are not necessarily there for your immediate consumption, but even the leaves are part of the whole structure, and a Talmud Chacham says something, then it's not just casual. It's always requires some level of understanding, and it therefore needs its own limud. Hasomer sukato bikra'e hamita kishera. Now, this is an interesting case because it raises an entirely new concern, according to Amar D'Amar, and it ends up being a major factor in our contemporary concerns about the sukkah, which is just absolutely amazing. And this is, but Pashtas, there's a lot of different ways of learning this. Rashi understands that the case is that a guy takes a bed frame, he removes the inside of the bed frame, he takes out the mattress, and he takes out the, they used to use ropes to support the mattress, and now he puts the schach on top of this very tall bed frame that he had, so that the entire sukkah is basically a bed with schach on top of it. So for some reason, it seems to be a davar kosher. Why wouldn't it be kosher? And for some reason, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, imeni yechola lamod b'fnei atzma psula. If the schach could not stand on its own, meaning you don't have like a separate frame for the schach, and if you'd be using the bed as the walls, that's one thing. That's okay, I don't care about that. But you can't use the bed as the support of the schach. What would be the possible reason for that, asks the Gemara. My time at a Rabbi Yehuda. So there's two possibilities. Pligi bar Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Abba bar Mamal. Chanamar, mipnei she'in la keva. Because since a bed is generally something that you move around from one location to another location. So that means that this bed is basically a sukkah that has no particular, creates a sukkah that has no particular place in the world. As opposed to, let's say, you make a sukkah in a Winnebago. So then the sukkah itself is always kavua in terms of its own space, which is the Winnebago. But over here, the very floor of the sukkah doesn't move with it at any time. You pick up the bed and move it to somewhere else, and now it's a sukkah in a completely different location. If it's a sukkah in your Winnebago, so then the Winnebago has changed location, But relative to the Winnebago, the sukkah still is itself. We've seen this distinction many times, the Gabi Shabbos, that we talk about relative space because we needed to talk about the question of what's considered to be hanocha. So that hanocha was, in the cases, let's say, where you have a boat that's in the water, and if you would hold that water is not kavua, is the boat in the water considered to be, remember all of those cases. Anyway, so that would be the difference between the mission that we're going to have later, and the, which is if you make a Winnebago as your sukkah, and this Mishnah. So the bed itself is not kavua. This is how Rashi understands it. V'chadomer, that the reason Rabbi Yehuda holds its posel, is because he's ma'amida b'davar ha'mekabel tuma. Since he's holding up this sukkah with something that itself is not ro'ui for schach, and a davar ha'mekabel tuma is, obviously, that's one of the fundamental issues that we need to avoid for sichuch, since this is the entire base of the sichuch, therefore, it says, if the schach was a mekabel tuma, this is how Rashi understands it, which, if that's the logic, then he seems to be saying that it's an actual problem, midiraisa. Now, most of the Rishonim understand that it's a gezeira. So that if you allow the schach to be supported all the way to the top of the earth this way by a dover and a kabel tuma, you may end up being misachich with a dover that's a kabel tuma. So that's a completely different issue, in which case, this very common problem would be a derabbanan gezeira. So it's because of this that we've got all of these difficulties in making a sukkah, because the question is, how far does this go? This idea of being so ma'amid. We call this a ma'amid. So you can't have a ma'amid that's a mekabel tuma. So, I mean, how about a ma'amid of a ma'amid? In other words, suppose your entire construct of the sukkah is relying on metallic kalim, like screws, you know? So because of this, you'll note that many people are careful to make the sukkah in such a way that the wood is notched so that it supports itself. One piece of wood goes into the other piece of wood and so on. This way, they're makbid even on the sheet of the chazanish of a ma'amid of a ma'amid, and they don't have anything that is directly holding it up because of a tuma. Other people who have problems, let's say, with a metallic base on the sukkah, which lemaisa we had before the cases where we would be mevatel the sukkah the way Rashi understood it. We had these the actual metallic spits, right? And we had them running across the top of the sukkah. They were supporting the schach. That should be the same problem that we have over here if we understood them as schach supports. But anyway, many people have this problem. They'll have patios that are made out of metallic pieces. And then the question is, you know, so can I put my sukkah directly on the metal of my patio supports? So what many people do in order to avoid the problem is they first will take slats, put them across the metal, and then put the sukkah on top of the slats, and that way the ma'amid is not directly a davar mekabel tuma. So anyway, there would be two approaches. Now, the approach that says mipnei she'ein la keva, what's the problem? I thought a sukkah is supposed to be a dir hazaroi, so who cares if it has a keva, right? But remember that it's Rabbi Yehuda Gufa who says that the sukkah could be l'malam yesrim amah. And we remember Daik from that, that the Tzedafka Rebbe Yehuda, who tends in the direction of the sukkah, is actually a dira, and it's more appropriate, it has some level of kvias. So, obviously, this might be dependent on that sheet of Rebbe Yehuda. If you hold like the Rabbanan, which is, of course, the way we paskin, that the sukkah diras aroi being on, so maybe it wouldn't be. So some say that according to that pshat in the Mishnah, it could be it's dependent dafka in that machlokas. Obviously, there are grounds to say that it's not. My b'nai. These are two very different approaches in our Mishnah. The difference between the ma'amid b'dover mekabel tuma on the one hand, and then because of the fact that you move a bed and therefore it's not kavua, can be some very significant differences between them. For instance, take a case where you took these iron spits, right, and you just pounded them into the ground, and now they're very much attached, but they're definitely mekabel tuma. And you put the schach directly on top of these spits. So if you hold that the problem is she'en la keva, Well, obviously, this is kavua. It's metal pounded into the ground. So here, yesh lo keva. But if the problem is that he's ma'amidah b'davar sheni mekabel tuma, then you got a problem over here because are ma'amidah b'davar mekabel tuma. Spits are clearly going to be mekabel tuma. Now, let me just explain one thing. Note that Rabbi Meir says Abaya. Abaya is saying he wants to explain, not me. Omar Abaya, let me explain this. Loshana l'shamach. The whole point over here is where the support of the schach was directly on the mita. There's no problem of being misachecha gabe hamita. If, let's say, you put the schach over a bed. Yeah, you build a frame. You put the schach on the frame. Now, the bed represents the sukkah in terms of its walls, not in terms of its schach at all. Is that a problem? No, absolutely not. If your entire sukkah is made out of the walls of a bed, but the schach is supported by a permanent frame, when we say that it does not have kvi'ut, and when we say that you're speaking semech on a dover, that's mekabel tuma, obviously neither of those ideas would apply to that case, because if the problem is, there would be kosher, my time. If the problem is in Rabbi Yehuda, that it does not have a kviyut, it's not the walls that need kviyut. It's the sukkah, and the sukkah is nikra al shem haschach. So if the schach has a kviyut in that it's permanently related to this part of the earth, there is the floor of the sukkah, or this part of the Winnebago, for that matter. But that is all that we're concerned about. The question of whether you're going to bring in the mitah so that you'll have walls for your sukkah or you won't, that's irrelevant to us. And that's not the shame of the sukkah. So therefore, in this case, if the schach is on a frame, then yesh lo keva. And according to the other mandiyama, where the problem is that the schach is being held up by dover mekabel tuma, obviously it is not. It's being held up by the frame, a wood frame. Sorry, ein ma'amidah, but dover mekabel tuma. And therefore, no matter what approach you'll take to Rabbi Yehuda, it certainly is not going to apply to a case where the schach is actually not directly on the mitah.